listen to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Hey guys, thank you for joining us at All the Answers podcast, where we answer all your questions through the Akashic Records. We wanted to give you a little heads up that our sound quality is not excellent in some of these first few episodes because we were pulled away from our studio when Corona happened. So the longer you stick around episodes 8 and 9, things will be in order and sound will be amazing. So we hope you stick around. Enjoy.
What were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
I feel like we really should start by just owning that 2 out of the 3 of us here had sexual relations last night. That's very validating for the people listening. People do still have sex.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I wish it for everyone.
Exactly. You know, I was thinking this in the shower this morning, post-sexual encounter. I was thinking, sometimes as a lady person, getting fucked is legitimately exactly what the doctor ordered. And I know that's kind of funny and silly, but like, I really mean it in a sincere way that like, sometimes it kind of blows my mind the degree to which I'm like, oh, I thought I had 9 problems. I got laid. And now I'm like, I have, what problems did
I think that?
I have no problems. I was just pent the fuck up. Like, for real.
Yeah.
So along with having our very romantic movie evening last night, watching Zombieland Double Tap, we then watched the Project Goop episode on about female sex. Orgasms.
Yes.
And it was, a lot of it is what they talked about, just that, just the like, the overall tension relief and life stress undoer that good orgasm can accomplish.
Thank you, producer and sound engineer, having lady body parts insights. I really value that a lot.
Yeah. Well, why do you think he and I both watched that episode?
Why do I think any man on earth watched that episode?
Because we heard there was a vulva in it.
Yes. I love the part in that episode where the older lady who's the sex coach is like, isn't that beautiful, to the woman who's like jerking off on camera in front of the whole crew. And then like later they give you a shot. They give you a full on there.
Yep, they're like, that's it is.
That's the vag we're talking about.
Yep. And then a whole bunch of other ones just for, so we see the cornucopia of options.
So many options. And that's so validating and important for women. Cause like, man, is there a weird system of ideas out there about what a vagina is supposed to fucking look like?
Yep. That is intense. I can't even imagine.
So weird too, because it's like such a snowflake situation that you would think like, this thing is so crazy looking. I couldn't possibly assume other people's as looks like this.
Right.
Yet that's where our minds go. Like there's one kind of vagina. Speaking of vaginas, I have to thank Cassidy, Jamal, Jackson, Warner, Kersey, Warner Brown for referring me to television's Big Mouth. Because Kristen Wiig as Jesse's vagina, I think is my favorite voiceover work I've ever heard. Ever. Do you know what I'm talking about? The sweet little voice she plays.
Yeah.
I just love it. It's like she does this sort of angelic, sweet kind of like, hey, buddy, how you doing?
It's going to be
just down here being your vagina. No big deal. How are you? You know? Oh, God.
It's good stuff. It's a validating show. And I love hearing about people with young teenage boys who are watching it with them. And I'm like, when I first heard that, I was like, are you kidding me? And then I was like, that is awesome. That is some like, hard. I mean, they had to have sort of pre-parented to get to that place, I think, to be able to have a kid who would be willing to watch that show with their mom.
You mean, when you say pre-parented, you mean?
I just mean that they probably didn't just like suddenly become like a sex positive parent. Here, watch this show with me.
Uh-huh.
Like, because no, most kids would be like, go away. That is freaky. Go away, mom. But like to have a kid who'd be like, yeah, sure, let's do this and enjoy it and then talk about it together. I think that's a pretty I met a couple of people who have that relationship, and I'm just like, that is beautiful and intense.
Incredible. Like, I think sort of like necessary, important should be a given with all families. And of course it very, very isn't, mm-hmm. you know, because human mammals were so afraid to talk about this stuff, which is why I'm like, yeah, let's open the episode talking about that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, so getting laid is a really good thing. It feels good. And we could talk about just the straight biological of it, which is real. The sort of grunting animalness of it is very real, but also the sort of heart chakra connection, energy exchange end of things as well, or root chakra also, frankly, from what I little know. I know nothing about chakras.
Oh, you saying know shit. About chakras. And you're dead on when you say all that, because I mean, that's the thing. First, okay, we're going to get into that. By the way, I just pulled up all our questions. So now I have them here so we could
are any of them about sex?
No, but let's keep talking about it. So the root chakra, generally speaking, in a very generalized way, is about grounding, safety, stability, finances, earth, your real life, three-dimensional reality, etc. Connection, belonging here on the planet. Second chakra is about sex itself, creativity, sensuality, feelings, emotions, etc. Third chakra is like sense of self, where you belong in the world, like where you fit in with things or don't.
And what is that sort of belly or sternum?
Solar plexus. Yeah. Heart is obviously heart, love, connection, communion, oneness, and, you know, community, connection, love, connection with others. Voice communication is 5, 6 is the third eye, perceptive ability, intuition, psychicness, etc. And 7th is the connection to source or the divine. The point being, when you get boned, your kundalini channels run up the back, which passes through every chakra. It runs from the root chakra up the spine, out the top of the head.
So that's like a spiritual roto-rooter.
Correct. That's exactly what it is.
Got it.
Sex is a spiritual roto-rooter. Correct. And you know what's funny too is they say Aquarians, of which I am one, I have my sun sign is Aquarius, are known for two things, well, many things, but one thing is being the most astrologically obsessed. Like almost every astrologer you've ever had, anybody listening, if you go back and ask them, chances are good they're either a sun sign Aquarius or they have strong Aquarius placement somewhere or more than one place in their chart. And number two, another thing about Aquarians is more than any other sign, and I could give you info for each of the signs like this, but Aquarius more than any other sign grounds, like gets grounded back in reality and in their body through sex and orgasm. Oh. And that doesn't mean that like sex and orgasm doesn't ground other people. It's just that for an Aquarius, we can be so of the ethereum and of the other dimensions and in the higher self and seeing the big picture and talking to the bigger ideas and the higher concepts that like there is no here and now, which you know what? Reminds me of, and to finish that thought, so you get boned and you get back to the here and now, which
okay,
thank God for that. But it reminds me of our conversation on last week's podcast when we were talking about, we asked something about like, why do people torment and torture each other still? And the record, the answer that I heard in the records was this kind of, you know, big picture, emotionless, aloof, kind of like, well, because they choose to kind of, mm-hmm. I'm oversimplifying. And I remember your response, Cass, was like, yeah, but sad, but I feel sad.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of guidance around that, which I stand behind, but/and that is a very Aquarian, by the way, view of reality. Aquarius has that detached, aloof kind of big picture view of things and can see from that vantage point, which is what makes us valuable teachers often. But it can also be a great challenge in life because we're just like not right here, right now. So bottom line, if you know an Aquarius, think about sex with them.
Yeah.
Because they need to fuck you in order to be here.
The more you know. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of Aquarians everywhere.
Can you please, Desmond, right there where he says, the more you know, insert later the G.I. Joe theme song?
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle. G.I.
Joe. Not the rainbow from the more you know.
Isn't it? Wasn't that a G.I. Joe? No, it's not a G.I. Joe.
No.
What is it from?
It's just a Saturday morning, general Saturday morning cartoon thing that would, they would do a little PSA and then there would be a little rainbow thing.
Good call. I'm conflating that with my Saturday morning G.I. Joe experiences.
Apparently that was the show you watched, which I did not.
Well, you know what's funny about it is I didn't actually watch G.I. Joe as a kid, but it would be ending before things I was watching.
Oh.
Where it was just happening and I would hear the theme song and the words they say. All right. So did we cover what we need to cover on that point?
Just, I have no idea what the point was. We were talking about getting laid is a good thing. And if you're an Aquarius, doubly so.
Anything else you feel the need to add about getting laid, Kathy?
I think it's great. I think it is just release of that sort is in general really good. I mean, I will be honest that sometimes when I'm anxious and I just take care of it myself, I get less anxious.
Uh-huh.
If I do it in a like just really not connected way, it doesn't necessarily do the job.
Yeah.
But if I'm at all like, hey, this feels good and like connect to it at all, it doesn't have to be candles and fucking pan flute, but
pan flute. Every time I have sex with a real human being, there's always a pan flute or a lute or a sitar.
And they're live. You hire musicians to come through.
Or a mariachi band.
That's a bit much.
Well, that's how I roll.
That's true. And that makes it quicker.
Right. So you're saying when you jerk off, but you're connected to yourself while you...
I did not use that phrase.
Did.
I know. Yeah. Then even that serves not as awesomely, but it serves the purpose to a certain extent of relieving. I have 17 problems. Okay, I have 5 problems.
Right.
So it's nice.
Yeah. Do you have a problem with the phrase jerk off?
No, not at all. I just don't like saying it myself live on a podcast, but I'll get over that.
Or not. Maybe I'll just the irreverent one.
Yeah, I have a weird sense of propriety when it comes to certain things that are being recorded for posterity, and it's ridiculous. I think I should let go of that.
Maybe, or that's just your jam. Meanwhile, I'm trying to pick a popcorn kernel out of my
teeth. Katie is picking her teeth on our Zoom cam.
I'm failing.
With a barrette? What the hell is it?
This is a bobby pin.
Bent bobby pin. That seems like a terrible idea. So your person who is in touch with the divine all-knowing wisdom is jamming a rusty piece of metal into her gums.
Listen, it's not the edgy end. It's got the little rubber nubs on the end. It's still not working.
No. Do we need to pause so you can go brush your teeth?
No. You know how maddening that is when you have a popcorn kernel?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, or any little piece of thing that I'm aware of the whole for an hour.
Right?
Yeah. And that's, it does. Yeah.
Maybe that's a sign that we both need to be getting laid more so we don't feel like that problem is a real thing. We'll just erase all of our problems with sex. I think that's called addiction.
And I just noticed that Desmond pulled out a Kleenex while we were talking on camera. So I was wondering what that was going to be about. Oh, turned out he was blowing his nose. It was not as dirty as I was making it.
Oh, you're gross. Okay, great.
Oh, I'm gross jerking off.
Uh-huh. Yep. Well, there's no logic to my judgments.
It's of course just not. Arbitrary. They're just judgments.
Okay. So you know that I don't really judge you and think you're gross, right?
No. I would rather you stuck to your guns and just lay it on.
You're the worst. Okay. I'm looking at our questions. How about we read through them again and see if there's anyone here. I have a question here that I think might be interesting for us. I've been reading through while you're chatting. And let me know what you think about this one. There's a few here that I'll read. Why put ideas and desires into my head and heart that will only be thwarted at every turn when I follow my heart?
Oof.
And then what am I here to do specifically? Now, that's an interesting question because already I know some things about the answer is not in the same vein as the question. Like they're not actually asking the correct question. But that is a question that I think a lot of people who are struggling really deal with. And so might be a really useful one. Let me read you a couple more and you can vote, or we could just go with that.
But I mean, we could go with that. I feel like I want to defer to you on that. If you feel like you have a way of framing it that'll allow you to ask the question in a way that we can talk about, go with it.
Oh yeah. No, what I mean is I would ask the question exactly the way it's written, but I already know just from a wisdom perspective, what this person is really getting at. There's something under it that isn't being stated.
Let's do it.
I'm just going to read a couple real quick. Not going to say names. John, Jacob, Jingle, Richard. What must I do to stop needing pain as a teacher? That is an excellent question. How do I flow with the universe and help the greater plan into fulfillment. Interesting.
Okay.
What happens when we die? Does our spirit awareness continue?
I don't know if I'm ready for that one, personally.
All right. So
I like the pain as a teacher question, too.
Yeah.
It's a good, clean, solid question. I'd go with either one of those.
It also kind of harkens back to last week's question.
It's true, a little bit, but it's more personal.
What must I do to stop pain as a teacher? Okay.
This person has some patterns that they need to break.
I guess what we'll do, since we don't have this person's permission to say their name publicly at this moment, is when I'm saying the prayer opening this person's records, I'm going to say their name silently just so that people listening understand how that works. So like when you open someone's specific records, you want to use their full legal name if you can. I find that full legal name helps sometimes, but I don't always need it. Basically, if I go, John, you know, the John I'm thinking of, they go, okay, I got it, that John. But full legal name is what you get taught when you train as an Akashic Records reader.
So that's good to note if you are, and we'll put this in our stuff, but if you are submitting questions, go ahead and let us know if it's okay to use your name or not.
Yes.
And we will honor either of those requests.
Exactly.
It's more fun if we use your name.
Yeah, it is fun. So then we can like imaginarily chat with you while we're doing this. Be like, you know, John, here's what they say. All right. So, you know, I was thinking too, it might be fun, you guys, in later podcasts, if we open your guys's records and mine so that we're all sitting in our records as we do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, I'd be very curious to see what you guys start to notice with that.
Or if we actually start to get guidance.
Or just what you notice. Who knows what you might notice? Yeah. You might just feel a little more peaceful. You might be happier. You might be tired. I don't know what would happen for you.
Oh, I'm always game to have you open my records.
Anyway, it's something for us to play with down the road if we like. By the power of divine light within us, come Holy Spirit, Spirit of light, Spirit of truth. See, you know what's funny for me is I can even say the prayer sarcastically and it still starts to open.
Nice.
For the highest good of all throughout time. Fill our hearts with divine love as I humbly ask permission to open the divine portal to the highest realm of the Akashic Records for, I'm saying their name silently, Akashic beings of light, guide to the deepest truth of their being, releasing any blocks and restrictions to their abundance and highest good. Lords of the Akashic Records, assist to fully embody their soul's light, to fulfill their soul's purposes, and to heal any accumulated karma. Surround with the enlightenment and wisdom of their masters, teachers, and loved ones, clearly direct with perspective and actions to those that manifest their divine plan. And I'll just go quiet for a moment here. Okay. All right. Free of all resistance, judgment, and fear, we're now filled with divine love, and the records of this person are now open. So the question is, what must I do to stop needing pain as a teacher? And so, all right, some of this may be a little challenging to hear, this person. the first piece is there's a little bit of a sense of you kind of love to suffer and you love pain a little bit. You might be a 4 on the Enneagram. You might want to look into that because that I'm hearing that. You might not be, but it's sort of the sense I get is the essence of the 4, which sometimes the 4 on the Enneagram can be someone who's like, my problems are very special and different and mm-hmm. No one understands my problems. And they're so different and I'm so alone that I can't be understood and I'm alone and different and no one understands me. You have a flavor of that in your essence, but it's also got mixed in with it. Like there's kind of like an identification with your own sorrow. Like it feels like you're pretty good at feeling sad. Like you can go into sad. Like some of us, by the way, that could sound judgmental and that's not how it's meant here. We'll take Katie Rubin, me, for example. Like, you know, I go to anger really easy, which is not attractive. And, you know, it's you could judge that as much as you could judge going to sad or going to dissociated, which is what a lot of people go to. So please don't hear that critically. It's more just sadness seems to flow. You can touch into that pretty easily. So you have a bit of an addictive, sort of habituated pattern to sticking with your sadness. Now, part of that, here's what's tricky. Being a human is so tricky sometimes. Part of what makes it complicated for you, this person, and when I say this person, I'm repeating in my head the person's name.
We just use like a first initial?
I could do that, except then people could look at the Facebook wall and get.
All right, sure.
So part of what makes it tricky for you is that this quote-unquote sadness that you have an easy time tapping into is also part of your gifts and your brilliance. In other words, you have an artistic, sort of poetic, energetic resonance. Your frequency feels to me like artsy, sensitive, internal. You got a lot going on the inside in a kind of soft, kind of Piscean way. Fluid, is psychic, intuitive, otherworldly kind of way is what I meant by Piscean. So when you say, what must I do to stop needing pain as a teacher? What comes is the sense of, one, not being married to this kind of sadness energy as your identity. So not being married to this sadness energy as your identity, but dropping into it when you desire to create from it. In other words, this kind of river of softness that I experience through the middle of you, drop into that to write your songs or write your poems or cook your meals that you do creatively, like whatever you're doing. Maybe you knit or something, or some kind of sewing, knitting, crochet, whatever you do that's kind of introverted and creative. That's a time to tap into that energy and channel it into the work. But you don't need to identify with that energy in your day-to-day, moment-to-moment living. You can identify with, instead, your, and by the way, that doesn't mean dissociate away from it. You must be with yourself, of course, always and for every human being. And what you can identify with is your dreams, your visions for what you'd like to create, your visions for the reality you'd like to be living in. You have an ability to sort of see the future, truly. Like you're like, I have these lofty goals and dreams, but they must be just fantasies and they must be crazy. And to which we say, yes, they are fantasies. No, they are not crazy. In fact, fantasy is where every creation begins. Allow yourself to fantasize. See the future you see and pursue it actively with your feet on a daily basis. Okay. So as you continue to do that, you will begin to identify, if you choose to, with your mind, and you'll have to actively choose that with your mind every day. It's like a discipline. It is a discipline. You'll have to identify with that which you are creating or intending or heading towards, rather than identifying with this river of sorrow, as it were. Okay, that's the first piece. The second piece is, what do I have to do to stop needing pain as a teacher? Well, part of this is a question for humanity, which is why this question is so well chosen by your co-host, by yourself, is that so many human beings, well, 99.9% of human beings grow, learn, and change only through pain. So partly you're dealing with the human condition, but partly you're dealing with the conditioning of the human condition. In other words, you wisely, person we're speaking to, have asked this question, which means you understand in theory and in concept that you could perhaps choose from some other place. So some people listening might say, what other place might you choose from? And you could choose from a desire for better things, a desire for a more joyful experience, a desire for more fun, more fulfillment, more ease, more flow, more sense of self, more contentment, whatever. You can always choose to create, grow, learn, and change from within yourself a desire to have more, better, softer, gentler, happier, more joy-filled. That is the how. What must I do to stop needing pain as a teacher? You must choose to motivate yourself and your choices from the pursuit of more joy. And the third piece, the final piece, there is some energetic, spiritual, emotional, spiritual, emotional, energetic healing that you could use and receive and have that would ferret out some stuck energies in your first and second chakras, in particular, trauma from the past in your early life. You could use this healing to ferret that energy out so that you're not unconsciously attracting to you the pain you say you no longer desire to need. So there is some magnetic attraction happening here. And side note, for all people listening, this is how trauma works. When there is trauma to the human nervous system, it locks itself into the body, being soul, spirit mechanism, organism, system, functionality, and begins to function as a magnet would, drawing to it more of itself. And so we say for Katie Rubin, so they're like, give the example. Like, so I had a thing where, for me, Katie, in my life, where for years I talked about this with friends at the time, and I've said it to some of you listening, but I had years where I would attract toxic men. And when I say toxic, I mean like abusive or mean or really closed-hearted or unavailable or sociopathic or drug addicted, like just like all kinds of like very challenged individuals. And I attracted them. Like I would see them and be like a magnet to them. I'd be like, yes, please, you sexy, fucked up beast. And then I started to do work on it inside myself. And what I discovered was that as I continued to clear the energetic resonances of trauma in my own nervous system, body, being, soul, spirit, heart, mind, etc., as I began to like vibrationally raise the frequency of those places so that they were no longer the energy of pain, sorrow, suffering inside myself, suddenly those men just like, they literally stopped showing up on my radar. And so now we speak again, we, the beings of light in your records, person we're speaking to say that this is the way that it works. As you understand, we see that you understand this conceptually. We know you are wise. You carry deep wisdom, deep divine feminine wisdom. We recognize this in you. This is your gift. And so the clearing of these energies will create a frequency in your first and second chakra that will evaporate the need for pain as teacher. And it will invite the possibility of choice or visioning or intention setting as teacher. Namaste. And we say, finally, if you have any kind of yogic practice, yoga of some kind, this is serving you very well. Continue with this. I wish we had this person here so that we could get feedback from them and have a conversation, but that is the completion of that conversation. And so I think unless either of you guys have a question for that person's record keepers, we can close their records.
No, I think I have good conversation bits, but I don't necessarily need to hear from the keepers.
Okay, great. Okay. Let me see. Is there anything else they need to say for the people that are listening? No. Okay. And so we say thank you to the beings of light, the record keepers, the lords, the masters, the teachers, the loved ones in that person's records. Thank you for this wisdom, insight, the teachings and the healing energy, the vibrational frequencies that came through today. And for the generous, like reflection of this person's soul. I feel like a real generosity of spirit around their reflection of the person's soul. So thank you for that. So the divine portal and the records for that person are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the records for that person are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the records for that person are now closed. Amen. And just let that pull out of me for 1 second. Okay. All right. What do you think?
Well, once again, really interesting stuff that comes through that I get. Like, I love how it sounds like just good advice that could apply to a lot of people. But again, I know it is also very specific to that person and to other people in similar realities, similar circumstances, similar framings of their life. And I love, but it is also applicable to 90% of us in a less specific way. And I love that.
Yeah, there were like a lot of details in this one, though, specific to this.
Yeah.
I can really feel the essence of this person. I think this person has a strong spiritual connection, whether they actively do it or not. Because that was like when somebody has a strong spiritual practice and I open their records, immediately I get every little nugget of information. It's just like, there it is, pa, 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 pa. And when people are struggling with a spiritual connection, we have to work harder, I find, in the records reading to like wade through the weeds and the heaviness of the humanity to get the soul. Anyway, so there was just a lot of cool specificity there with that one. The yoga and the poetry and the way they, I don't know, what's that called? Like crocheting? I don't know.
Right. They're made some sort of handwork. That they were clearly involved in some sort of handwork.
Yeah, and then all the stuff about how they sort of function internally. Anyway, lots of stuff.
But yeah, good stuff. The three different, I want to say them because I didn't write them down. I want to say them and then we can loop back to them. Three things that came up for me, which I find interesting. The first thought that you brought forward was the idea that I recognized through having two therapist parents and having a lot of conversations about sort of standard psychotherapy concepts, is disidentification, which is different than, what was the word you said? Don't
dissociate away.
Dissociate. It's different than dissociation. Dissociation is, I'm gone. But disidentification is you are not your feelings. Your feelings are an aspect. They are a thing that is happening, but you are not. So even saying, I am sad.
Yeah.
A dangerous phrase. Dangerous, right. Maybe not, but I am feeling sadness.
Yes.
I'm expressing sadness. Sadness is coming through me. I mean, when I've had this, my dad reminds me of this concept a lot. It's one of his favorite reminders. If I'm having a really hard time and I'm ideating heavily on something and I'm feeling really depressed or really anxious.
Yeah.
Just the remembrance that, it's almost like the phrase, this too shall pass, where it's just like, this is a thing you are feeling and you are not that feeling. And that's the thing about, like you were saying, probably a 4. On the Enneagram,
yeah.
They are special and their feelings are them, you know, and that they live inside this ocean of feelings. And it's not totally true. Like it's an illusion that we hold on to. And I really,
that's really cool, Cass. I love that. Disidentification. Yeah. It's sort of like the AA or the 12 step principle where they say like feelings are not facts.
Yes.
It's like, have your feelings, process them, but you don't have to then decide that's who you are, aka identify with them.
Right.
Which brings me back to the Rogering conversation.
Rogering.
Yesterday, if you would have asked me how I was doing, I would have been like, everything is terrible and I hate being alive. And then I got laid and now I literally don't remember what I was so upset about. And my point is like, it was feelings that frankly, it was just a lot of stress from like having way too many things on my plate lately.
Yeah.
But that stress got alleviated. And then lo and behold, I'm not feeling identified with any of it. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So I discovered that the solution to disidentification is
getting laid.
Right. Yeah. I guess
it's the all purpose everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless it's like really awkward, awful, like, not good sex, then it like makes things worse.
Oh my God, right? You know what? To that point, and to the point you made earlier about when you're jerking it, which you would never say that on the
never
podcast, but when you're jerking it and your heart is connected to it or you're present emotionally or whatever, I have to say, like, I've been in a little bit of a sexual walkabout lately where I'm my options and diversity is present. I really notice, and like, this is obvious to every woman listening probably, but I just want to validate it, that boy howdy, when the person is not connected to their heart, I mean, I'll go so far as to say for myself, when a person I'm sleeping with can't do heart energy, I can't have an orgasm.
Simple as that.
You can't just mechanically rub the right spots and hit the right nip angles and make it go. The machine of me at this point requires a heart connection. And I'm not talking about we're in love and we're going to make babies and live on a hill forever. None of that is required. Just an open heart.
Right.
So that my heart chakra can just connect with your heart chakra. And then all the other chakras can line up. And it's almost like, as I say it, I realize, like you said earlier, Cass, like it's a roto-rooter, right? So if the heart is open, the stuff that's trying to come up the pipes gets stopped right there.
Yeah.
And it can't fly out the fucking pipe.
Yeah. The top of the head doesn't get blown off.
Exactly.
Dude, in the right way.
Dude, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. You were going to say it. You had two other.
Okay. So that was the first thought. Shit. I should have said them all three really fast. The second was, I wanted to compare the idea. of the sort of trauma model and how it works. To, again, I am a jack of a lot of trades and master of none of them at all. So I know a little bit about a lot of things.
Sure.
So anything I bring up, I want everybody to go and research the thing that I talked about and tell me how wrong I was later.
Yes.
But in the meantime, and I really do mean that, like I invite that. Do not take my feelings are not facts.
And I would like to reiterate, like, we'd love to get your emails.
Yeah.
Like, tell us what's up. Like, no, it wasn't this. It's 40%, not 80%. Or
allanswerspod@gmail.com. Oh, the idea. So as I understand it, how neurofeedback works, practice of neurofeedback, which is a sort of the advanced version of biofeedback, which is an idea of like how the body holds trauma and how you can work with sort of all sorts of different signals within the body or the mind or the brain to measure and then feed back that information to help change what has happened in the body. So with neurofeedback, simple example would be like I got beat up as a child. And in order to protect myself, my brain literally changed how it worked to create a very important protection for me in that time. But what's happened then is then like literally my brain waves operate differently than the guy next to me. And they're off in some way. My right hemisphere theta is just 90 miles an hour. And my left hemisphere alpha, which should be balanced, is way low. Again, I'm spewing some bullshit here, but the concepts are sound. So, and then what happens is we get far removed from the trauma and we're done with it. We've moved on. It's no longer a thing, but our brains are still in that space and they continue to operate as though they are in the trauma years and years later. And that causes, I mean, that is a huge form of addiction. It brings us to addiction. It brings us to terrible choices in our life, or just even just simple sort of cyclical ideations where we get stuck in a space. And the way this feedback works is you don't even do talk therapy. You just address the wound.
Part.
Yeah. It's like your brain is injured, but not in a bruised way.
Totally. How does it work? Is it like electrodes? Is it like...
Yeah. So you have electrodes on your head. They do not put anything in. They are only reading. They are listening in a sense, and they are feeding that information into a computer, which knows how to process it. And then what it does is it gives you, so you do a baseline first. They do a reading that it gives you a baseline of things. And then there's a bunch of protocols you can run, which they're both audio and visual. There's like a picture on the screen that might be like a mandala. And in your ears, there's maybe a cool music tone. And what they basically will say is like, you want the tones to get lower, or you want the picture to get brighter. You don't really actively, consciously control those things, but your brain, as it is watching, that's how feedback loops work. Huh. The feedback is every time the picture gets a little bit brighter, that means that the brain waves were heading in the intended direction of change.
Okay, wait. I got to clarify something. So are you saying that the person, let's say it's me and I'm having a session and there's a voice in my ear from whoever that says, you want the mandala to get brighter. Do I then think in my mind, I want the mandala to get brighter?
So this is a point that I get a little confused on. Yes, but no, but you're not, your exertion of will is not actually
necessary.
The most important part of that. Your brain needs to know that that's what's needed. But other than that, you are not going, get brighter, you know? I mean, you are participating up to a point, but the way feedback works is it just reflects. So the picture reflects what's going on in your brain. And every time the picture gets brighter a little bit, then your brain goes, oh, that's what you mean? Great, I'll do more of that. So it sees the picture or the tones in your ear. Like if I hear the sound getting lower, I don't then go, yeah, good, go lower. Because it's way too complicated adjusting my brain waves for me to go, okay, theta, lower, alpha, right hemisphere, front, forward, you know.
Okay.
But the brain is a supercomputer. It knows how to do that. So it takes the feedback information and adjusts in a continuous process.
And
so then by the end of it, in theory, after doing it for a while,
yeah.
And then if they run another like diagnostic, they're going to show that things are more in balance.
Okay. So let me ask this now. This is fascinating. I love this.
Repatterning.
My dad is actually involved. We're talking about your dad. That's funny.
Yeah.
My dad, his clinic, which is called the Loveless Research Institute in New Mexico.
Where God, what an ironic name. I'm just kidding. Yeah,
it's spelled Lovelace.
Lovelace. Yeah, I know where I know that's what everything in Albuquerque is named after, Lovelace.
Totally. Anyway, he has an arm of his. So his research institute is a pulmonary lungs-based research institute where they're trying to rid the world of lung cancer. And they do a lot of lung-based research. But they also have a brain arm now where they're doing biofeedback on people and on animals.
Probably neurofeedback at this point. Yeah.
Maybe. They're a little behind.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, like, neurofeedback is now like 15 years into its...
But let me tell you this. When I was 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, getting into biofeedback and neural feedback out of desperation, living in Grass Valley, because I happened to find a random guy who happened to do that, I told my dad about it. Because I thought, look at this sciencey cool thing that we can bond about. And of course, he was just fully in resistance, thought it was woo-woo horse shit. 15 years later, maybe 10 years later, I'm bad at numbers. He came to me, we were at dinner sometime visiting, and he said, you know, my company's starting this new arm. It's fascinating. We're doing this fascinating brand new technology called biofeedback. Now, all the science magazines say the truth of it, the truth of it. And I was like, yeah, remember when your daughter said the truth of it 20 years ago? He was like, huh? Literally no recollection of that conversation.
And biofeedback was started in like the 60s, if I understood it. My dad's been doing it my whole life. Yeah.
Totally. I know. I mean, if you live in Northern California, you've probably heard of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point being, they do some of it. And the Albuquerque and my dad are a little slow to take on stuff that isn't like proven in 90 different science journals, which is always like, to my mind, the slowest way to go. But okay, if that's what works for you.
But to return to the point.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the neural feedback. Oh, I was going to say, so the way you do this is you go into a room with an individual therapist, or how does it work?
Yeah. I mean, I think theoretically it can be a technician. I'm not sure where, you know, basically they just run protocols. The problem with the whole business is there was a little too much shysterism in it. Little too much people pulling some BS that we heard about when my folks were doing it. And so it kind of pulled them out of it. So like the technology and the concepts are super sound, but some of the application has been a little snake oily.
I see.
So some people are selling it a little too hard in certain ways, unnecessarily, because it works.
And can you go in and be like, I want to work on this specific issue?
I think so.
Or is it more like, read my patterns and fix them?
I mean, I went in and said, I'm having trouble sleeping because my brain is spinning. I'm 90 miles an hour. And I only did a few sessions, you know, and it was kind of casual because it was my parents, you know. I thought for the most part, it helped a little bit. My problems aren't that hard. I mean, it helped enough. It broke the pattern at the time.
How are you sleeping now?
Lately, not great. So, you know.
Okay, so here's what I'm hearing you say. Tell me if this is true. That at the time, you were like in some kind of really wound up cycle where you couldn't sleep hardly at all. And this changed it at the time.
Yeah, but I also only did like 2 sessions, and you should do like 10.
Okay.
And again, from what I've heard and read and seen a little bit, not witnessed directly, it's really good on things like that are a little more sort of measurable and intense, like addiction.
Yeah.
Like hardcore addiction that rises out of trauma.
Right.
It is really good for that, because that is addressing, like, literally there are a lot of addictions. You know, you are feeding, you need your brain to work differently. So you're pushing.
Yeah.
You're pushing the rhythms different, you know, you're forcing the rhythms. So this just goes, okay, we'll just make your brain work in the way you'd like it to work a little better.
Interesting. I want to do it with my relationship to sugar.
Ooh, I'm sure it's an option.
Yeah.
It's also really fun because you're just like staring at mandalas and listening to music and just like sitting in a really comfortable chair.
That's pretty groovy.
Yeah. Oh, and just the reason I brought it up is that it's sort of just a more like slightly more, quote, scientific allegorical framing of how you describe the trauma model and how it works spiritually.
Well, look, that's because from my point of view, I mean, we're literally talking about the same stuff.
Yeah.
Same exact stuff. Like the work I do repatterns the brain, repatterns the heart, repatterns the nervous system. So 100%. It's, you know, what I find fascinating to that point is that like there are certain things that spiritual healing. How do I say? It's sort of like the way I'm experiencing transformation more and more over the years is like we could theoretically get at any problem with any one of these tools. Like I would argue you could probably treat anything with neurofeedback or like that is psycho-spiritual in nature or you know, psychological, whatever. And, or in theory, you could treat everything with spiritual energy work. But I do find that for the individual, certain things work on certain things.
Yeah.
In other words, like I've been messing around again with EMDR lately. You know EMDR.
I sort of know EMDR.
Okay, here's the gist of EMDR. This is a fun episode for people. We're edumacating folks on all
the, all the modalities of possible healing.
Yeah. So EMDR is like, it can either happen in the form of light or sound. And what's happening is your eye, if you do it with light, your eyes are watching a light travel left and right across a little device that has like a LED strip. So the light is going left, right. And your eyes, you're supposed to follow it with your eyes and keep your head still. And sometimes they'll have you do like crossing patterns with your hands where like your right hand is tapping your left shoulder and your left hand is tapping your right shoulder while your eyes are going left and right. And the theory behind it is that certain traumas actually cause breaks between the two hemispheres of the brain. So the left and right sides of the brain are actually supposed to be communicating all the time back and forth. But with trauma, the neural pathways that allow that cross communication to occur get damaged. So when you're doing EMDR, the left and right with the eyes and the tapping, or you could do it with sound, it'll be like a buzz in your left ear, a buzz in your right ear. It goes buzz, buzz, and it rotates back and forth. That reallows the two sides of the brain to start communicating again. So it literally rewires the way your brain functions. And there are things, Cassidy, like it's so mind-blowing to me. Like there's some really good, actually, it's like, I don't know what the protocols are for people. Like, I don't want to say something and make people go do a thing that's maybe dangerous for them. So I'll say like, check with your doctor, check with people. Don't just do this necessarily unless you're ready to deal with your own consequences. But you can go on YouTube and search EMDR trauma healing. And there are plenty of videos and audio tracks you can listen to. And I find you just close your eyes, listen to the track, 10 minutes of that. And I need like a few hours break because it is so potent. The experience of the two sides of the brain re-communicating with one another when they haven't been, that specific thing is not a thing we're doing in spiritual healing. Although what I do know is I bet you I could ask the record keepers, hey guys, could you do some EMDR like biofeedbacky something for this person's brain? And sometimes when I've asked them stuff like that, they're like, no, send them to YouTube and have them do EMDR. I'm like, cool. Okay.
Nice. And they'll, it'd be great if they'd be like, and look at Jack Sparrow 73, his third video, because that's the one you need.
Yeah. Well, oftentimes that info does come through because I'm such a research junkie when it comes to healing stuff that like, I'll be like, oh, you mean like the one that we saw last Thursday? And they'll be like, yep, that one.
Nice.
So that works out. But yeah, nice. You're right. That would be nice. So you had a third thing from what I was...
It may or may not come once if we sort of do a review of everything that you channeled at all, then
I definitely
just a quick review.
Well, I can't do that because I don't remember anything I channel.
Yeah. You go back and just listen to it later.
Yeah. What were you going to say too about the person? You said you were going to bring it back.
Oh, I wanted to bring it back to like how this relates. I think what you said while in the reading was, you know, the way trauma works is it leaves sort of residue in the body, and then you sort of have to operate around that residue, and it gets harder and harder to, I'm totally making this up, but this was my takeaway. But then like, yeah, your body is literally kind of your body, spirit, self, full being is changed by trauma. And you then operate with this new model. You now have a new model of yourself, right? And you have to use it. So you make adjustments, you operate from that place. You did not say this, but this is sort of my extrapolation. So you're now, let's say I break my toe and I never get it fixed. Okay. So I now have a messed up toe for all time until I get it fixed. I'm going to limp, but maybe I'm not even going to limp after a while. I'm just going to adjust how I walk around that. which is going to mess up 17 other things too.
Yeah, 100%.
My spine's going to be screwed up. And until I fix the toe, or at least address the toe in some way, and then that can deal with the rest of the stuff. And maybe, so my extrapolation being that if this person feels like they need pain as a teacher, and frankly, the fact that they knew to ask that question says they're already pretty far along in their journey of self-awareness. Like, that's a really wise question.
Well, that was said in the records.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was definitely said. Yeah, and it was a kind of a simplistic answer, but not a bad one, but just simple. That the answer was like, stop using pain as a teacher. That's not what they said.
Yeah, but not at all.
It was deeper than that. No, it was
not at all.
Make choices.
And it, no, Cass, it was much, it's actually not very simple. That I remember quite clearly. Like, that thing is deep to do that thing they're talking about. Maybe you mean simple, like it's not a complicated series of steps the person.
Yeah, I don't, simplistic is the wrong word, but it seemed very clean and clear. Like, follow. I can't remember, frankly, now the exact framing. I remember now.
What they said was, they said, look, if you focus on intending to create what you desire, in other words, following joy, like, I am miserable, I'd like to have more joy, it would be fun to go to the pool. And you identify with that line of thinking, like, I'm the person who decides that going to the pool feels better. Here we go, going to the pool, I am the pool goer.
Yes.
That is a very difficult shift to make.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Thank you. And you reminded me what my first point was that I wanted to make, and it was directly on that. I love things that sound simple, but are revolutionary.
Right. There's a, again, I go back to 12 step. There's a saying they say it can be simple, but not easy.
I was talking with a friend last night and we were talking about, you know, whatever thwarted ambition and sort of the feeling of like, where do I go next? And how do I grow, proceed? And she is also a sensitive, a psychic. She was getting all kinds of readings just for me in our conversation. She was, well, here's what I'm getting. And that was kind of cool to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sort of random little blurps and blips of well, no, follow that. But she, what did she say? Oh, I was talking about, you know, feeling envy about somebody and not wanting to feel envy and feeling envy or jealousy at, you know, at someone else's success, which is a shitty feeling and kind of a useless feeling. But she said, don't not feel that. Of course, it's okay to feel that. But what if you saw that as your desire for growth and success expressing itself?
Yes.
And that's kind of the same thing. It's this idea of just like
flipping it.
Yeah. And it's disidentifying with the feeling and turning it more to the to the desire and the action.
Yep. That's
right. So if the desire is to operate from joy and not learn from pain, rather than don't learn from pain, it's head towards joy.
Yeah,
actively.
I had a therapist who said to me years ago, jealousy is a map of where you want to go. And she's like, I had a friend who at the time I was living in Florida and I was like unhappy. I don't remember what was going on. And
you were living in Florida. That's what was going on.
Part of it. And I had a friend who got into grad school for opera singing. And I was so jealous. I think I had like three sessions just being like, oh, I don't even know how to talk to her. I'm so jealous. And my therapist was like, jealousy is a map. Do you want to go to grad school for your art? And I was like, I do want to go to grad school for my art. And then I applied to grad school for my art and I went. And I was no longer jealous of my friend.
Yeah.
Because I was doing what I wanted to do. And so I love that conversation that you're initiating, because it's like, we can all look at jealousy and go like, oh, okay, you know, those people have more money. I want more money. What's required to do that? You know, or those have more whatever. What's required to do that?
Yeah. Instead of just hating the negative feeling, what is the negative feeling, what we would call a negative feeling, I guess, what is it
pointing you toward?
What is it pointing you towards? And then operate towards the thing that you want.
Yeah.
I was in therapy working on anger with my therapist and how I really am afraid to even go near anger because it is an expression of violence in my head, you know. So I don't want to bring anger into the world because I don't want to be the person who brought anger into the world. And, you know, there's lots of things we could say about how misguided that is, you know, but it's what I was feeling and I just had to get it out. But, you know, then shifting that towards what is the anger teaching you? What is it? What is the anger that you need to feel? What are you angry about?
Yep.
What is the thing that you're angry about? And what is happening in your body? What is happening in your mind? What is happening in your actions when you feel anger?
So a friend, we have, you and I have a mutual friend. I won't name just because I don't know if they want to be spoken of about this, but they posted recently on social media a post about, it was like, hey, people, I've been around a lot of young people lately. And I hear a lot of young people say like, you know, thinking that their quote unquote negative feelings are make them bad and wrong. And this person was like, no, in fact, your negative feelings make you quite right. Because, and he said, there's nothing wrong with negative feelings. Period. And then people were commenting, and I forgot to write on it this thought that I wanted to add to that, which was to say like, yes, please, let's not make ourselves bad and wrong anymore. No more shame around lower self feelings or feelings that society calls negative. Instead, we want to look at the question, what is this feeling suggesting to me? What is it lighting the way toward? What is it telling me isn't working? What boundary needs to be set? What conversation needs to happen? What violation of myself am I participating in? Like, we don't get angry, sad, whatever, for no reason. We get angry, sad because the nervous system is saying something's off.
Yeah.
Not because like you're bad for feeling that. It's saying you can't sleep with that person anymore, so stop. Mm-hmm. Or you hate this traffic because it's frustrating. You can't move. Maybe get off the freeway and go for a walk until it passes. Like, there's a million ways to honor anger or sadness or whatever,
right,
rather than make it wrong or bad. It's right. Telling us something. It's providing information. My therapist and I talk a lot about like appropriate anger and when and how to use it. And, you know, because obviously it's like my jam. Mm-hmm. And so it's what I like about it that I'm sort of finally coming around to is that like there's, it's a delicate, subtle balance that must involve the heart. In other words, if my heart is open and I'm feeling angry and I listen to my heart, I know how to communicate the anger in a way that will be useful in the moment. Mm. But if I close my heart down and just go like, fucking here we go, it doesn't go well. Or it might work in the moment, but it leaves people feeling bad.
And you too, probably.
Exactly. Me too.
It doesn't express properly and you right. end up not being expressed.
Yes. But here's the thing I need to add is that there are other times, and this is very important for people who are a little bit more on the codependent spectrum or a little bit more afraid of anger, is that there are times where you being anyone, appropriate expression of anger, causing or bringing up feelings of not feeling great for other people, that is perfectly appropriate when it's appropriate. And you are not an asshole just because you said something true in a strong way and that person had a feeling they don't like having.
Uh-huh.
That is codependent if you go like, I can't say that directly because they're going to feel uncomfortable. But there is that fine line where if it veers into I'm going to abuse them, or
right.
I want to enact vengeance on them, or I want them to feel bad or feel smaller than me,
right,
then you are causing that. And that's on you.
Yeah.
But that right there is like, I don't know if you feel that way, but I feel like that is a very subtle,
tricky line. Challenging fine line. There's the sort of new age or, you know, nonviolent communication concept or all whatever linguistic idea that like, oh, I can't make you feel anything.
Right.
I retold this story back to my mom recently, and I'm going to say it's apocryphal because she claims she never did it.
Yeah. But
I remember her telling me about being in a workshop and someone was like, he was being kind of a, you know, eight guy vibe. It's like, look, I can't make you feel anything. That's not my responsibility.
Yeah.
I cannot make you. And so my mom literally walked over to him and stepped on his foot and said, did you feel that? I did that. And exactly. It's true. Like, there is a line. Like, of course I can make you feel something. I can be responsible for the action that caused the circumstance in your heart, and now you feel it. That's just a linguistic way of getting to the same result.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I have to know that there's a balance of those things.
Well, like, for my money, it's sort of like this. If I say to you in a strong way, maybe because you're not willing to hear it any other way, if I say a thing to you in a strong way that makes you feel uncomfortable in the moment and dislike me in the moment, but in the long run changes your life for the better, I'm all about it.
Yeah.
But if I say a thing in the moment that hurts your feelings, that has no long-term benefit and was just about me doing some twisted, like, I need to have power now thing, that's not cool.
Right. Problem is knowing the difference. My fear of a lot of some self-help frameworks,
yeah,
I won't name any of the big, huge, powerful ones that take all of your money and make you go through 100 classes.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. There's
your problem is what? Your problem
that is. I get the vibe from a lot of them that for especially men, that there's a lot of like pseudo conscious men who get reinforced to be power manipulators with these frameworks.
Because
it gives you permission to be radically honest or to not be responsible. I can't hurt your feelings. Only you can hurt your feelings. Bullshit. You can do a lot of things that can fuck people up.
Totally.
Badly.
Totally. Well, but don't you find, I mean, I even find that that's the case with things as simple as therapy. Like, man, can people who go to therapy use therapeutic language to manipulate the fuck out of each other? Like, when you put two, I've seen this happen so many fucking times. You put a couple in couples therapy and you start to like give them language like, that hurts in my body when you say that. People will use phrases like, that hurts in my body when you say that, about the most bullshit of things, because now they have justification for why they get to be a victim or why they get to be mad at you about or blaming you for whatever.
It's complicated to be in these human bodies. I'm with you. But
it's so fucking tough. Like, what the fuck?
So the journey is still constantly like, it's like go in, then go back out, then go in, then go back out. Like, you don't want to overthink it. But on the other hand, you got to examine it so you're sure that you're operating from a place of love and balance. But then you have to let go of that because you don't want to use the frameworks too heavily to interact with people, because you're not actually interacting with them as humans.
100,000,000%. Because then, yeah, that's that thing of then you just sound like a walking therapy book. You're never like, you know, those people you meet where like everything out of their mouth is like some kind of, and how is that for you? Like, you know what I'm saying? That icky poo-poo thing that frankly is part of the whole point of this podcast, is to be like, what if you could be a spiritual person who's just not annoying?
Who like to talk about getting dick.
Yeah. I like dick and God, God damn it. And on that note, thank you for listening.
This is All the Answers.
What a great chat.
With your host, Katie Rubin, and her grand assistant, Cassidy Brown, her friendly skeptic, Desmond on the ones and twos.
Yeah, everybody, this week's message, get laid. Just get laid. Yeah. And then have some healing work done, or some neurofeedback, or some biofeedback, or
some EMDR, or some spiritual work. Or
just like eat pie.
Yeah, some really good pie.
Yeah.
That's also a sex reference.
Yeah.
Yes.
High five. Yeah.
Really good pie. High five. Take care of each other.
Love you guys. See you next time.
Bye.
Love it.
What were you asking for? All of the answers. What are the answers?
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.